This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 108. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I'm really glad that you're here, ready to talk photography, and we're joined by thousands of photographers from all around the world, and we're ready to sit down, and we're going to learn in this episode from Jaron Wilke, the staff photographer from BYU, the university in Utah, and we're going to talk about all the kinds of different photography that he does and some of the interesting things he's doing with his workflow. But before we get into that, we want to take a second and thank our sponsors. The sponsor for this episode is Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched their latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, which is a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, which is really nice for email, and it has 15 new templates so you can have a new, fresh design for your website, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace with a free trial at squarespace.com and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere. Well, Jaron, I introduced you just briefly, but tell us, Darren's on the line as well. I forgot to welcome you, Darren.
Hey, Jaron.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Jaron, see, I'm talking to Darren and Jaron, this is going to get me all messed up. Jaron, tell us a little bit about what you're doing at BYU.
Well, first of all, I think there is a problem with Jim and Darren. You combine those, you have Jaron. So I think this is going to get complicated really quick. So here at BYU, I'm a university photographer. And for people that don't know what that is and what it entails, is I'm one of the staff photographers for the university. So anything that the university needs, they come to our office and we take care of them. We have two staff members and then we have five or six students that help us out. About half of what we do is all the BYU athletic photography, everything from posters to game day action. And about the other half is just a good mix of everything, from portraits, from posters, from social media stuff, you name it. It's just kind of hard to describe because it's just a little bit of everything. And that's what's so fun about it is I get to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, that really is fun. So how does one become a staff photographer at a university?
That's a good question. I kind of just fell into it. I was actually just taking pictures for the student paper here at BYU, and my boss saw my work, wanted to talk to me, and needed to hire somebody pretty quick. So I became his darkroom technician back in the day, and that's just really how I fell into it. And I just haven't left. I've learned that if you hide all the important documents, they can't get rid of you. So that's what I did.
Where is that guy's file? I can't close it.
Exactly. I'm the one that knows where the president's pictures are kept. So that's the key to my longevity here. But really, people that are interested in university photography, a lot of students, university photographers across the country need student employees. That's a great place to start if you're a student. But also a lot of, staff photographers at newspapers and other institutions convert over to university photography. And to learn more about that, you can go to, we have an organization of university photographers called the University Photographers Association of America, and that's at upaa.org. And there's information there about people that are interested. There's always job openings that, it's really a great career. It's something I've really enjoyed.
Well, that's awesome. So what's kind of your specialty? What do you do more than anything else?
Boy, that's tough. I'd say I do a lot of event and sports photography, and then mix in with lighting and portraits on location, especially a good mix of that. So just a little bit of everything.
Well, one of our editors, Jeff Harmon, who wrote a really popular article on the website this week about using the Mac or PC for photo editing, and I thought it was a fairly unbiased review of photo editing machines. So if you're interested in finding a new computer for photo editing, definitely check his article out. But he turned us on to you and was talking about your workflow and some of the interesting things you were doing in connecting your camera to the iPad so that you can get photos out quickly. Tell us about that workflow.
Yeah, it's a long story. I hope you have time.
Well, we got 45 minutes. So.
Perfect. Well, for several years, we've been doing wireless tethering on our shoots. When we do a poster, especially of an athlete, we would have originally the iPad card, and we'd send JPEGs of the photos to the iPad so our graphic designer could see and make sure we had the photos we needed so we could move on to the next shot. And, it was really, really freed us up. It's so much better to have that preview on an iPad versus trying to look out the back of your screen, especially for a graphic designer or a client or an art director. And it just made such a huge difference. And, got to the point where we're like, wow, you know, if we could use this at an athletic event, we could get our photos out really quickly instead of waiting till halftime or the end of the game to go and edit photos and email them out. And that's really where the genesis of this began, is how do we get these photos out quickly? So what we did is actually, the technology changed, of course. We went from to the 1DX Canon cameras, and they don't have an SD card, so we couldn't use iFi cards anymore. So we actually went and bought the Canon WFT, I think it's E6A, and started using that wireless file transmitter, and that made such a huge difference in what we were doing. It's a really strong piece of equipment. It's really robust. You can be 40, 50 feet away from the camera. The iPad can be 40, 50 feet away, and it still will transmit the photos. And that was great. So we started at the athletic events. I'd take an iPad with me, and like during timeouts, I would try and, you know, tweet out a photo or email out a photo, and that's kind of where things started. But it was definitely the start. We had a long way to go after that. Go ahead.
So go ahead, Darren.
An interesting question, since you mentioned it, and since the 7D Mark II has been hailed the Mini 1DX, do you think that would work with the 7D Mark II for our listeners who are getting into that camera for the first time? Because that was kind of one of my biggest things that I was upset with, was no Wi-Fi inside that camera.
Yeah, you know, the iFi, we call the iFi card kind of like the gateway drug of wireless technology. Once you start using that, you want to just keep on going. And the iFi is really great. We use the iFi. Well, now they have one called the iFi Mobi, which is actually really nice. It's a little bit simpler setup, really easy to set up. And for cameras that have SD card slots, they work great. I think the Mobi is only, you know, like between $60 and $70. So it's really a good place to start. And I think it would pair really well with the 7D.
Awesome. I think that would be really great information for those who don't quite have the budget for the 1DX at this time.
Oh, absolutely.
So the Canon WFT-E2-2A file transmitter, what does it connect into? What port does it connect into?
So the E-T-2-2A, that's with the 1D Mark IV, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a side port in the camera that it connects to, and I'll tell you, I did have that one for a little while with our Mark IVs, and oh, they were there. It's tough to set up. I think the biggest obstacle to wireless is the camera companies. They make it so difficult to set up that so few people venture and try it out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had it set up at one point, and I was using the iFi card with Shutter Snitch going to the iPad. And the problem that I had was, you know, you could set it up. It did work, but it was always a little bit of hassle and a little bit of getting everything in the right spot at every time. And I thought, forget it. I just want to take a picture, and yeah, I would never do it. Yeah, and so is this working with less setup every time you shoot?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I say. The iFi is the starting point. But if you really want to get serious about it, you need to move up to, you know, there's even something in between called the, what is it called?
The Cam Ranger?
The Cam Ranger, yes, which I know a lot of people use and like. And then after that, the next level is definitely the camera's proprietary, you know, attachments, which is the Nikon WFT and the Canon WFT. They're expensive, and that's the problem with them. But they're robust, and you can't break them. And I've been able to use them, and, you know, we take a lot of pictures, and it's able to keep up with the pictures, send them to the iPad using Shutter Snitch, and it works great.
And what's the delay between taking the picture and getting it on the iPad?
Well, that does depend on how big of a JPEG you're trying to send to the iPad, and then, of course, you know, how close you are to the iPad. But on a general shoot, you know, about a second, maybe a second and a half.
Oh, that's really good.
No, and it's very, very, very reliable. So, in fact, only every time that we're doing a photo shoot where there is an art director or a client or a graphic designer there, we have the iPad out, and they're seeing every picture we take. And the benefit of that is they know we have the pictures, and then we can move on to the next setup or to the next model or whatever it is. It just saves us a lot of time on photo shoots. And the other thing is the client is comfortable knowing, oh, yeah, we got great pictures. Look, I know I can make this work for what we're trying to do. It's been great, and it's been a big part of our workflow.
So when you're doing, you know, a sports shoot or something like that, I can't imagine. Well, this would certainly be useful to, you know, get the photos to somebody in PR so they can send out photos on social media or something like that. But if you're doing something with an art director or something that somebody that's looking for more of an artistic piece, do you find that this could hamper you in some ways because they're seeing the raw, unedited photo? Well, I don't mean raw in terms of it's a raw file, but I mean it's an unedited photo, and you're saying the whole time, now it's not going to look like that when we're done. Don't worry, where it's going to look cool.
You know, that has never been a problem, actually. Usually, if there's an art director there, they'll have their graphic designer with them, or the art director and the graphic designer will be the same person. And, you know, they know what's coming out of the camera is just the first take of it, but that they're going to get what they need. And I think it brings more comfort to them than anything, that they're comfortable with the pose, they're comfortable with the lighting, and they can almost pre-visualize how they're going to use it. It's not the final delivery of the image, but it's just an intermediary to make sure that we have what we need on the shoot.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I haven't had any issues with that at all. In fact, it's funny, we started using this technology and we'd start getting calls from clients saying, hey, you know, we need you to go up and do this photo shoot. Hey, would you mind bringing that iPad thing? I heard about that. That's really cool. And it actually helped us get new shoots and new clients that we hadn't had before.
Oh, very interesting. That's definitely interesting. And you said you're using Canon. Are you using exclusively Canon?
Yeah, we're Canon shooters. I do have a Fuji X-T1 that I just picked up, and I'm testing out that. The wireless on it is not nearly as good, but it's got some advantages as far as the silent mode. You can take pictures silently. That's really nice. But for sports,
the silent shutter.
Yeah, the silent shutter on the X-T1. But for sports, you know, we're pretty much just using Canon.
So would you agree with a lot of photographers out there that these mirrorless systems just aren't quite ready for it? I know that a lot of people are beating this subject almost to a dead horse, but I picked up the A6000 and I caught a lot of flack by saying I was less than happy with its focusing system, and Jim's on the fence with the X-T1 if it had a little bit more megapixels for a nice travel camera. But for sports and wildlife, we've kind of ruled it out as a really viable option. I mean, you could probably muddle through it, but you know.
Yeah, and I think sports and wildlife are the two areas that are definitely the weakness. But I see some exciting things in those cameras. Again, the silent shutter, that is huge. You know, there are situations where I need my camera to be silent, and having that camera would be very helpful. But yeah, I like the X-T1. I like what seeing in the viewfinder, seeing the actual results of what the picture is going to be. You know, that live preview is really cool. And I think that there's definitely something there. I see it as a direction that we're going to be heading in. But as far as for me, every day, I would have a hard time using it on every shoot. There's definitely some limitations. The sensor size, I think my biggest frustration is I just didn't want a full frame sensor. I want true wide angle. And that's something that with the X-T1 just drives me a little crazy about. It's nice, but it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, I think we're both on the same page too in that respect. I think Jim was about ready to pull the trigger on that camera, but it's just a little bit short on the megapixel side of things. But I can see the benefit, especially when you're doing some of your shots. Like it looks like you're doing some acting shots when people are performing and fine art and things like that. Having that silent shutter is probably really beneficial. You know, when a ballerina's on her tiptoes, or you know, someone's trying to play out a really dramatic scene where you know even the slightest movement in the audience could really disturb the moment.
Oh, absolutely. I was at a concert the other day and I used it. It was beautiful because nobody even knew I was taking pictures. And so that's the reason I have that camera, is for those situations when I need a silent shutter. But I think that Fuji especially is really doing some exciting things. They're bringing a lot of energy to the photography community. So I think you're going to see even more from them.
I think that's a fair assessment as well. And so, I mean, would you say that it'd probably be best to maybe stick with the Canon and Nikon things? Because I've been listening to other podcasts as well, and Jim and I listen to a lot, and it's kind of been almost like a war on DSLR. And I'm trying to be Switzerland in that respect, to where I kind of see, you know, the middle ground where everyone's kind of seeing the drawbacks and benefits to both. But some people are going over the top and saying, oh, well, you need to ditch all of your DSLR equipment. Like if you go on a photo walk with us, you can't have a DSLR. It's almost as embarrassing. Embarrassing as having a a point-and-shoot film camera from, you know, the gas station. So that's one thing that Jim and I try to focus on, is not being too biased with it, but still in the same sense trying to find the application for both systems.
Oh, I think it's definitely, it's one of those that's what works for you. I mean, I have colleagues, other university photographers, that have pretty much 90-95% switched over to, you know, the Fuji system especially, and it works for them and they're getting great images. It totally depends on the type of photography you're trying to do. For example, if you're a travel photographer, what a great camera. What mm-hmm. a great camera to travel around the world with, have the very discreet camera, silent shutter, all those things, you can get some great pictures. But it just depends on what's for you. Where I shoot so much sports, I really can't go over to it. They're not ready for that.
Yeah, I when I well, it's like when you get a car and you know they have, you know, they're like some cars are fun to drive, and I see I've never understood that because no car is fun to drive. I just want to be where I'm going right now. But cameras, there are some cameras that are truly fun to use, and the Fuji X-T1 is that for me. It's small and it's light, it's easy to carry around. But more than anything, the aperture dial and the separate dials for ISO and shutter are so nice. We have so many buttons on the back of our cameras, and I was like, okay, but I just want three. Shutter, aperture, ISO. Like, if that's it, and I'd sacrifice all the other buttons for those. And so I love it. It's just, it's so, so nice to use that camera. But like you, for me, the image quality isn't quite there. Hopefully yeah. Soon. But I wish Canon and Nikon would look at it and say, oh, okay. We'll get your controls and put it on my camera, and then we're ready to roll.
Yeah, I think they need to be paying attention. I mean, you look at the numbers, the mirrorless cameras are selling a lot of cameras, and they are fun to shoot with. And I think, like I say, it's a different experience to shoot with it, to have that, to not be using a mirror, but to have that live preview. That's I actually really like it. But, you know, if I'm going to take a camera home to shoot my kids, that's the camera I take. Light, easy to use, and it's a fun camera to shoot with.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we have a lot of things we want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit more about some of the things that you're teaching in photography. You're going to be teaching a conference workshop at Imaging USA and a lot about sports photography that we get a ton of questions on. But before we go into that, let's take just 1 second and thank Squarespace for their support of the Improved Photography Podcast. Squarespace is the easiest way that I have found to build your website. You're going to be up in minutes. The designs really look beautiful. That was the thing that finally tipped me over to Squarespace. You know, they had, you know, an easy platform. I'd looked at it. It was inexpensive. But then they made some changes and came out with some gorgeous designs for photographers. And finally I said, all right, it's time for a change. And Squarespace has been great. Their new platform, Squarespace 7, just builds on top of that with even more features, with 15 new design templates to pick from. So your website has a lot more options of what you can do for it. It's starting at $8 a month, and they have 24/7 live support. And for the first time ever, I can say that when I've tried many different photography portfolio solutions, and I can say that although that I hear a lot of great things about their support, I have never needed them. I always need support. I can never figure this stuff out, but I've never needed their support. It really is easy to get it going. They should advertise. Even Jim Harmer can figure it out. So if you decide to go over with Squarespace, be sure to use offer code IMPROVE at checkout and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere. Well, Jaron, let's talk a little bit about sports photography because I know you do a lot of that. In our classes that we teach at photoclasses.com, it's one of the biggest problem areas that we see from students. For the first year that you do photography, you're going to have sharpness problems. It's just a fact. It's getting easier as cameras get better at this, but you're probably going to have serious sharpness problems for the first year you shoot. And then you start to get comfortable and then you buy a faster lens and the sharpness problems start all over again because now you're dealing with even shallower depth of field. So we see it all the time from our students, but the time that they finally, that they just come running to us and say, I don't know what to do, is as soon as they start shooting sports. You know, they have a kid in high school or something like that. So walk us through kind of your process. If you got to set up the camera, you're going to go shoot sports. What are you going to do with the focus generally?
Okay, well, I'm going to suggest something radical. I hope people are holding onto their chairs. First of all, the first thing I always tell people to do is crack open that manual. I know it's crazy, but there's
frightening.
It is.
It is.
But there's, and especially guys, we just have a hard time looking for instructions, as my wife can attest to. There are so many different settings on these cameras now that they're so customizable that you may just not be in the right mode. You may not be in the right area of what you're trying to do. So get to know your camera, get to know the autofocus system, and what is right for the situation that you're trying to shoot in. After that, I mean, one of the things that I tell people to do is to take your focus point, to take it off your shutter and move it to your thumb focus. We call it thumb focus, where you're controlling the focus with your thumb and not with your shutter finger.
Okay, we just talked about that in the last episode, that back button focus. So, and we gave a couple solutions why. And personally, I go back and forth. Sometimes I use it. Sometimes, nah, just won't set up the camera that way. What's your reason for the back button?
Okay, imagine you're in the corner of the end zone of the football game, and you have this beautiful play where the running back is running towards you, ready to dive into the touchdown.
Okay, if it's somebody running toward me to the touchdown, it's probably University of Utah, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Because I can't imagine BYU getting to the end zone.
Ouch. So if that happens, and then all of a sudden, the referee just slides through the frame. That is one of the perfect examples of when you want a back button focus, because you just pull your thumb off as soon as he clears. You go put your thumb back on the button and reacquire focus and continue the play.
And why can't you do the same thing with your forefinger on the shutter button?
You can, but it's going to get jumped. It's going to jump the focus to the referee and then have to try and jump back. And that's why I hate shutter focus, because whatever's in that box, it's going to try and focus on. And for me, you know, especially where I have lots of obstacles going back and forth, especially at like football and soccer, where there's so many people on the field, being able to pull off your focus and jump back on makes a huge difference in keeping continuous focus. The other thing is I noticed that there is a difference on shutter focus. When you depress the shutter, actually, there's a slight delay from when it takes the picture to it opens up the mirror and starts focusing again, because you're working off of one button. Having that second button to just drive autofocus makes a huge difference in that too. I noticed that the focus tracks better, and it acquires better after you take a picture.
I'm glad you said that about the delay, because I've always kind of felt like that delay was there, but it didn't seem to make sense. I mean, it's just sending the electrical signal from the back button or the forefinger on the shutter button. But I've always felt that was there, so I'm glad to hear that other people are saying the same thing.
No,
yeah, I think you just confirmed my sanity there, because I thought that was a phenomenon that only I was noticing.
Yeah, no, I switched maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, and I would never go back. I mean, that one thing made such a huge difference in my focus. It really did, and I noticed the difference immediately. So that would be my number one tip for people.
Okay, well, photographers, you heard him. If you're wanting to set this up on your camera, there are some steps, and it's different with each model of camera how you actually set this up. Fortunate for you, we have an article to explain exactly how to do it on a wide variety of different cameras. So go to improvephotography.com/BBF for back button focus. And we have an article there that'll explain it in the easiest terms that we could find. I set up that page because I was looking on another page on the internet trying to find somewhere to link people who kept asking about it. And so we set up that page. I think it's the easiest way to do it. So go check that out if you're not quite sure how to get the settings right.
Yeah, go ahead.
And one thing I noticed with the 5D Mark III, the 1DX, and some of the higher-end Canon cameras is that you can fine-tune your focus. And I actually had a student from ours. He was from the UK, and he was doing track and field photography and was having trouble with focusing. And I recommended back button focusing as a starting point. And then that leads to my question is, do you use any of the case studies and different types of fine-tuning with focusing on your 1DX, since you do have that power? And is there any kind of easy way to explain that to users who this might be a new subject to?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny because I shoot 19 different sports here at BYU, and each sport is different. So one of the things that these newer cameras have that really give us an advantage is that there are different presets, I guess what would be the best thing to call them. And for me, I use Case 3 on the 1DX, which is just instant focus on subjects hitting the point. But there's different cases for faster tracking, less tracking. The sensitivity, you can change how sensitive it is to subjects moving in and out. I actually will set up different scenarios for the sport I'm shooting. I have a different philosophy for my autofocus for baseball versus, you know, football or basketball. And I'll tweak it as I'm going in the game, kind of depending on what I'm doing. But those presets, I think, are actually very good, and they do a very good job of getting you in the right direction.
Okay, so walk us through a couple of those. How might you set up a game for... Oh, let's go. What's in season right now? Basketball.
Okay, so for basketball, I like Case 3, which is the instant focus. So anything that's in my focus point, it focuses on. And the reason for that is that there's so much in and out of basketball. Same thing with, you know, there are players walking through, there's referees walking through. So for me, I don't want it to try and track as much. I'd rather just be in control of the focus and not worry about tracking. But on the other end of it, let's say track. You get an athlete running around a corner. I want to track that athlete through the whole corner. There's not going to be anybody walking in between me and the athlete. That's a perfect situation to do focus tracking, turn the focus tracking up so it's more sensitive.
Okay.
Very cool. And did you use any of that when you were photographing baseball, Jim, when you were shooting the D4S?
No, mostly I was just scared for my life. Those because the best, everybody was you know, left-handed. There's a disproportionate number of left-handed athletes, by the way. But so I was shooting on the side, and the balls, every foul ball was coming right for me. Like, they were aiming for me on every time. I was just frightened the whole time. And also, I'm going to confess, I was a little bit distracted by that machine gun shutter on the D4S that I wasn't thinking too clearly.
Yeah. Baseball can be dangerous. One tip I have is, if you're worried, wear a baseball helmet. Especially if I'm in the dugout, you're in the lens. You're not paying attention to everything. And just for safety's sake, I can throw on a baseball helmet and feel a lot safer.
That's not bad. You also look like awesome.
Totally. Totally.
And if any kids come by, you're like, yeah, I can sign that for you.
that hasn't happened yet, but I look forward to it.
All right. Where do we go from here with the nerdery of photography? Because that was just awesome.
I think I did want to talk a little bit more about our wireless workflow, if that's okay.
Yeah, please.
So I didn't finish my thought, and that happens from time to time. I think one of the things that people are really interested in what we're doing now is we actually, if I'm in a baseball game, if I'm in a football game or basketball game, we are sending images directly from our camera to FTP because we're posting immediately to Instagram, to Twitter, to Facebook in real time. And that's one of the things that people have been interested in learning more about. And the way it works is basically we have the Canon with the WFT E6A.
Can I pause you for just one second? For those that are a little bit less technical and may not quite know where we are, at least before we get to this. So FTP is the file transfer protocol. That's how big things are passed through the internet. So you may have, you know, a public relations department, whatever. If you're shooting for any kind of sport, they're going to want you to FTP your images after the game to them. You know, you can't attach 3,000 photos to an email and send it to your boss so that they can put it in the newspaper. They're going to have something set up on their website so that you can FTP the images to them. And so most of the time, photographers are taking the photos, running to their laptop at the end of every quarter or halftime, end of the game, and they're putting them on the laptop and then putting it up through FTP to whatever service they're sending it out to the wire. And you're talking about sending it directly from the camera to FTP. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think a big part of it comes down to how social media has changed how we watch a sporting event. I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, when I watch a game on TV, I'm not just watching a game. I have my phone or my tablet on my phone. I'm checking Twitter. I'm making comments. I'm interacting with a second screen. And that's, the habits have changed where, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, it was okay for us to wait till halftime or after the game to send the photos. If we wait that long, we're too late now. So that's really where we were trying to see, how can we get these photos into the hands of people much quicker? And in fact, in real time as the game's happening. And kind of, as we mentioned before, using the iFi and everything, it will send all the pictures to an iPad. That's great for a shoot where we're shooting a model or something like that. But at a basketball game, I don't want to have every picture sent to my iPad. So we have something called selective transfer that the WFT allows you to do. And just, we only will send the images that we want to send. So a play happens, there's a timeout, I choose and send a couple images. And using our camera, we can either use, there's two ways to send images from your camera out to FTP. One is to have a wireless network set up. And, you know, we do that in our basketball arena, in our football stadium. We have a wireless network that's just for photos. And it basically uses that wireless network to send photos to a Dropbox type site. We use Photo Shelter, but you could use Dropbox or your own custom FTP site. And what we do is send them out, and then we have social media managers or student photographers that will be there. Those photos will come in. They'll crop them really quick, and they'll post them on Twitter. They'll post them on Facebook and Instagram. At a football game, we've got it down to where about a minute and a half to 2 minutes after we've taken a picture, it's online. And that's made such a huge difference in our social media presence. Now people are watching the game and then they see a play, then they look at their tablet, they see the tweet come up, they're like, oh, this is awesome, I just saw this happen. And they're sharing it and they're interacting with us, and that's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really fun. And I really think it's kind of it's a big part of, you know, especially sports and events photography's future, because these cameras are capable of doing it. It's just, again, it's the setting it up to make it happen is the hardest part. And the camera manufacturers aren't helping. So we just created a bunch of PDFs to walk people through how to do that, because it is a little bit labor intensive. But once you have it set up, it works great. What's changed now is, for example, I just shot a basketball game. I show up to the basketball arena, I plug in my router, and I take pictures. During the course of a basketball game, I'll send maybe 30 to 40 pictures to the site. And then I won't edit halftime. I won't edit pictures at the end of the game. I don't even have a laptop anymore. I just turn my camera off and I go home, because the pictures already have been edited. They've been sent out. They've been put in a Facebook gallery. I'm done. And that's changed, you know, how we work. And it's been a lot of fun. And the fans love it.
That really is cool. That's awesome. And we'll be sure to link to that. That's at jarenwilkie.com/wireless. Yep. You have those PDFs and some instructions, but we'll be sure to link to that. So just go to improvephotography.com/108. This is episode 108, and you'll get the show notes, and we'll have a link right over to that. So if you can't remember it, that's where you can go to get that information. Well, I want to talk a little bit about education. Do you do much teaching as well at the university, either in a class or just working with student photographers?
A bit of both. I used to teach beginning photography classes here in the visual arts department. I don't have as much time as I used to, or as I wish I did. So I haven't done that for a couple of years. And again, I love spending time with my students and helping them improve. And in fact, a lot of students that work for us hadn't really ever gotten into photography till they worked for us and have left becoming awesome photographers. But I love teaching. I also do some conferences and workshops and such to share what we do.
Well, I've worked with quite a number of university professors now who are, you know, crafting the curriculum for their universities. And we get questions regularly about, you know, from younger people mostly who are interested in, you know, going to art school, going to a dedicated photo school, or just going to a regular university. And, you know, some people saying, if you want to be a photographer, you should really study business, et cetera, et cetera. All kinds of different advice. But to be perfectly honest, as I've worked with several universities on their curriculum, boy, have I been underwhelmed at the kind of things that they're teaching. I find that the focus is still on film photography and the darkroom, and I've never been satisfied with that. What's your kind of philosophy with the formal teaching of photography? Do you focus still on that, or what do you think?
I think most university programs are more focused on the fine art aspect of photography. And I'm much more a commercial type photographer. So that's much more what I'm interested in. So, it varies from school to school. But I think, you know, I think photography is one of those things. The only way to learn photography is to take pictures, especially bad pictures, because then you can learn and you can get better. And, you know, the key is having a mentor. Now, if that's in a formal, you know, university program, that's great. Or if it's, you know, a friend or on a website, whatever it is. But having somebody that can give you feedback and direction is really helpful in helping you learn photography. But photography, you can only do so much in a classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually had this conversation with a peer of mine about how, you know, the emphasis on film, there's still an importance there because that's just the roots of photography. I think there's probably a little bit too much emphasis based on the conversations I've heard with previous podcasts with Jim, and also looking at other curriculum just to see if I wanted to go back to school after finishing my master's degree in a different subject to take photography. But the way I look at it is either they need to split it up to where there's more fine art orientation to it, maybe more commercial orientation to it, and then maybe even saying, okay, well, to get your undergraduate in photography, that's when we're going to focus on the artsy side of things, the fine art, seeing like a painter and learning more about film. And then if you really want to master photography and get your hands-on experience, that's where I would think maybe a graduate degree could really benefit you, to where you could actually go out with someone like Jim or a staff photographer for the school and actually get credit hours and learn how to shoot. Like you said, learn how to take those bad photos and improve them, and take some great photos and learn what you did right as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our program here has changed quite a bit, where actually they have brought in more commercial photographers to teach classes. I know JP Morgan's teaching a class right now here at BYU, which is really cool. He flies in to teach it. And you know, having that real world experience is just so important, you know, and, there's only so much you can do in the classroom, but to be out on set, to be out on shoots, helping and assisting, I think you learn so much more.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. I guess to expand on kind of the problem that I've seen at many universities is the professors who are in charge of pulling the strings and making the decisions are the older people, are older in the industry. They have a lot of experience. They're tenured. You know, they've been around for 40 years and they're still stuck on the old ways of doing things. And technology is changing incredibly, incredibly fast. And so what I've seen a lot of times as photographers have come to me who are graduating from art schools, I sit down and look through their portfolio, and it's this artsy fartsy crap that nobody is going to buy. Nobody's going to buy it. There's just no commercial value for the kind of work that they're producing. 10 years ago, it was great work, but we're past that. The art form has progressed since then. It's changed, but it's also gotten better. It's also progressed. I'm sure some ways worse too, but it's changed, and I'm not seeing schools catching up with it. I have been in pretty close contact with one of the professors at BYU Idaho, who's leading the communications department's photography program, and man, she is doing awesome things. I wish so many photographers that I talk to could go through a program like that. But I guess part of this is a warning that if you do decide you want to take your photography to the next level and you want to, you know, go to a formal place, you really need to sit down and see what the program is going to teach you, because I've been very, very dissatisfied with just the quality of what the students, the skills that they have upon graduation. And that's a big red flag if you're going to invest years and thousands of dollars into it.
Yeah. For example, I don't have a photography degree. I have an English degree. I'm in the communication field. And actually, it's been very helpful. I had several of my students have gotten business degrees, and it's been very helpful for them. You know, photography, it's a different animal. And I think if you're considering to go to a formal institution, you really should do your research. Talk to graduates and say, you know, what did you learn? Would you do it again if you had the chance? And really, just before you take that plunge, really research it.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think that a lot of people can learn more from a workshop than a lot of classes that last a whole semester. So that's one thing that I really would like to talk about as well, is your upcoming workshop that you're having at Imaging USA. I mean, you could probably take a whole lot of information from that workshop itself versus one semester and maybe 3 credit hours at a university. And that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. Conferences and workshops, they really, because they're laser focused on what you're wanting to learn. And you can go to one of these big conferences like Imaging USA, and you can learn from 10 different photographers their best techniques and everything. And I think that's what's so cool about what we have now, is photography has changed. When I was learning to be a photographer, you know, it was back in the film days in the 90s. Every time I shot a roll of film, it cost $10 to go develop the slides and look at how bad my pictures were. With digital photography, we get that instant feedback, and it's so much easier to learn and improve quicker. You know, you can take the picture and know that, oh, I didn't do this right. I need to change my shutter speed or whatever. And so the learning curve is much less. There's no barrier to entry to learn photography. And now the information it's all out there. You guys have a great website that teaches people photography, and there's so many resources. If you have a question, if there's something you want to learn, you just Google it. You'll find it. And that's great. And I think that what it's done, the democratization of photography has made a lot of great photographers out there. And there's so many different ways where you can get an education in photography, and that's fun. And that's why I enjoy the conferences and the workshops too.
Oh, yeah, same
really
here.
Cool. Well, Jaron, it has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast and talk about some of the interesting things you're doing with workflow and education and lots else. We'll be sure to link over to your blog at jaronwilkie.com. And also check out the workshop you're doing at Imaging USA. Imaging USA. Is there another way that you'd like people to connect with you?
Yeah, no. Well, first of all, Imaging USA, just for those that are interested, it's on the 30th, January 30th in Tennessee. And it's an 8-hour workshop on sports photography. I call it the Complete Team Photographer. And I'm going to go through everything. You know, I'm going to basically download information to you that I wish I had 15 years ago. I'm going to go over each sport that I shoot, best positions, best approaches, best equipment. We're going to do live model shoots with athletes. I'm going to go in depth about this wireless workflow and how to set it up and how to use it. I think it's, if you're interested in sports photography, this would be a great way to learn. But yeah, we'll have that information. It's on my blog, and we can connect through that.
Well, that's awesome. Well, it was a pleasure talking with you, and we'll catch you later.
Great. Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.